The Property Pod. Welcome to The Property Pod with MoneyWeb. The property sector is an ever-changing sector. And in this podcast series, your host, Suren Naidu, chats to movers and shakers in the property industry.
Hello and welcome to The Property Pod, the country's premier property investor podcast. On this MoneyWeb show, we gain insider insights from leading CEOs, analysts, developers, and entrepreneurs in South Africa's dynamic real estate sector. Now, Dipula Properties, formerly Dipula Income Fund, brought out its annual results on Wednesday last week. A little bit unfortunate, one could argue, it on it being on mini-budget or MTBPS day. So did fellow SA REIT Emira with its interim results. However, it has been a milestone year for Dipula, which marked 20 years in business, 15 of which have been on the JSE, becoming the boss's top black-empowered and led listed property fund. Isaac Peterson has been the CEO of the company since the start, from what I understand, and Dipula Properties today has a market capitalization on the JSE of over 6.6 billion. And a property portfolio of around 10.8 billion. Isaac, welcome to the Property Pod. But it's been over 4 years since we've had you on the podcast. The last time was just a year after COVID back in 2021.
Good morning, Suren. And thank you very much for having us back. And greetings to all your listeners out there. Look forward to having a conversation with you.
Thanks again. 20 years, 15 years on the GSE, as I mentioned. The company also tweaked its name this year, I think around July, changing from Dipula Income Fund to Dipula Properties. It's quite a milestone year, 20 years. How has the ride been, Isaac, and maybe why the name change?
Yeah, Suren, maybe let me just address the issue of the name change. It was subtle, but I suppose quite significant in terms of why we did it. When we brought the fund to market some 15 years ago, we had a two-share capital structure. We had A and B shares. The A share was sort of more of an inflation-linked, income growth type instrument. Mm. And the B was a geared share. Both share classes obviously had, equal voting, but they were just had different income entitlements. So if you really think about the name choice at the time, the emphasis was around driving high income in the B, and that's why we adopted the name at the time. A good 3 years ago, we successfully collapsed the structure into a single share structure, and that obviously led to us, going out there and looking for a name that was more descriptive of what we do. So Dipula is effectively, we're a property company. So, describing ourselves as a property company rather than an income fund is effectively what it is, because property is not just pure income. Property is a hybrid between bonds and pure equities. And basically describing ourselves as property, would not leave any shadow of doubt in people's minds about what the business is all about. Mm. Why the name change now? As I said, that's some years after changing the capital structure to a single structure. So the 20 years has been a very interesting journey for us. We started quite small, I think listed with a portfolio of about 2.1 billion way back 15 years ago. And we had a very good run for about 5 years, growing market cap by sort of multiples of close to a billion over a five-year period. And 2018 becomes a bit unstuck as a sector, really, not just Dipula such. And then not too long after 2018, you had COVID and then, of course, in 2021, Dipula was one of the worst affected by the riots that took place. I'm saying worst affected relative to our size and by a number of assets and so on. But we navigated our way through that, reinstated all the assets, survived COVID. I think COVID was really a test for what this business is all about, in that, because we were sitting in this sort of defensive retail subsector, when collections went extremely low, our collections remained reasonably high because a great proportion of our retail tenants, what you term defensive tenants or tenants that just supply the basics. So, grocers remained open, butchers, all of the sort of tenancies that sort of supplied the bare basics and so on remained open. So our collections remained higher than 70% throughout the worst of COVID. And I think that really gave us the reassurance that, you know, having chosen this business model was exactly the thing that we should have done all those years. And that's how we've been repositioning the portfolio. Mm. But yeah, I think 20 years of varying cycles. And I think 2018 was quite tough for us. But I mean, when we listed in 2011, come to think of it, there was also some small financial crisis in the U.S. And then, of course, before that, you know, this fund was started in 2005. I think there was a 2008 financial crisis also. And that 2008 financial crisis is probably the reason why we listed, because it led to a situation where, you know, gearing went skyrocket high because interest rates in 2008 went very high after the, I think it was subprime or one of those crises. I can't remember exactly which crisis it was. And I mean, we had started the pool with, you know, with our last savings, and we had geared it quite high. And in around about 2009, we decided we need to deleverage this balance sheet. Otherwise, we're gonna see red, you know. and we started the work around 2009. It took us about 2 years, and by 2011, 11 August to be exact, you know, we managed to pull off a listing on the JSE.
Thanks for that nice history there. But maybe a bit of a provocative question here, but Dipula has stayed the course as a black-run fund compared to the likes, and I'm not comparing them per se, but, you know, we know the likes of Delta and Rebosis has had a pretty tough period over the last 5 or 6 years, for example. But what's behind the success of Dipula and staying the course, especially through the last 5 years? It's a much better year this year from your financials. But as you say, you know, you had COVID, then you had rights, and South Africa's economy hasn't really been growing even by over 1%, other than the bounce back from COVID.
Yeah, so then we are, obviously, we're proudly black run, black promoted fund that was initially 100% or close to that, you know, black managed, and had a very substantial black shareholding prior to the listing. But I mean, our business model has never really been based on any sort of, you know, expectation of favors around, you know, being black or BEE. Mm. I think we've always focused on having a proper value proposition in everything we do to the tenants, to staff that come and work with us, basically stakeholders, make sure that we don't disappoint banks and that, and then also ensuring that we continually improve our portfolio and that we do our business as good as any other competitor out there. So I don't regard Dipula's competition to being only black competition. I think our competition is an entire market, and we have to make sure that our business plan checks out relative to the entire market, you know, and basically that's what we've been doing and so on. So, and we don't measure our success only, you know, relative to some of the funds that you've mentioned that may not have made it successfully throughout, but there's other funds that happen not to be, to have been black promoted that also didn't make it, you know, it's that there's so few of us that obviously some of us will stand out if we don't make it to the other side of the river. But generally speaking, you know, you need to have a business that checks out. I mean, just to prove the point I'm making to you, you know, a week ago, Dipula took top honors in the Sunday Times top 100 companies. We made number one. And I think the compound return for an investor that would have invested, say, 10,000 rand in Dipula 5 years ago was a total of almost 96,000 rand. So if you invested 10,000, you'd have made 96,000 rand. And that assumes 10,000 rand, leave dividends in, reinvest dividends, keep them in Dipula. Mm. I mean, the company that came second to us, it only returned about 75,000 rand. And the company that was number 100 in that survey had returned only 13,000 to an investor that put 10,000. So 13,000 versus 95,000 or 96,000, close to 96,000. I mean, that's not, and it's not a survey that's based on any sort of subjective input. But that survey is based on is purely that everybody goes through the same criteria. If an investor put 10,000 in you, how much would they have had at the end of August this year? Mm. And Dipula returned a whopping 96,000 rand. So if we're doing that against the entire market, In other words, its entire JSC was the universe of that poll. There can't be arguments around why we're still around.
That's a cog figure there. But, you know, one could argue it also came at, you know, it's a timing thing because, you know, the sector was at an all-time low, as most sectors were
all industries were at all-time low.
Yeah.
I think COVID affected every single listed company out there.
Mm.
And COVID also affected every single listed property company. So, I mean,
it's still a fair, you
know, fair it's still a fair out. Absolutely.
Okay. Let's get to turn to results now. Not too much detail, but tell me about the results. I don't have specific questions there, but, you know, just share some highlights for us on your annual results that were released last week.
So then, I think in summary, if you look at our results, we've got a strong balance sheet that continues to strengthen. Our gearing went from about 36% to 35%. I mean, it's a 1 percentage point drop. That's still one of the sort of more competitive sort of gearing levels. Business is highly cash flow generative because interest cover ratio is sitting close to 3. And I mean, just to contextualize those two numbers, I mean, from a covenant point of view, I mean, LTV, our LTV covenant requirements at the moment are 50%. So you're sitting at 35. From interest cover point of view, cover ratio is 2. So we like a 3 type of thing. So the business is in a very healthy state from a point of view. We've increased NAV by 7%, 7.5% year on year. So our NAV went from 6 rand 60 in the prior year to 7.50. And what's also happened during the period is distributable earnings went up by 5%. We've got a 90% payout ratio, which remains stable. So meaning that our dividends also went up by a similar number. We've guided 7% for next year because things are definitely improving. I mean, that's driven by an expected growth in rentals. It's also driven by, obviously, reducing interest rates that will be in the system for a bit longer. Some of our more expensive swaps are also starting to sort of now expire. So we're swapping out at lower rates than what we did. You know, the funny thing that happened during COVID is your interest rates went down, but your swaps were quite expensive. So we locked in fairly expensive swaps, you know, during the period after COVID. But also, remember, you had the rapid drop in interest rates, and there was a rapid increase in interest rates.
Yes.
So if you had refinanced, around about just after COVID, which is what we did, banks were also fairly, conservative at the time in terms of the margins they were lending. Liquidity had dried up in the market. So some of the loans that we have in the system were actually done round about that period. So going forward, with the amount of liquidity that is available in the market, we should actually be able to actually drop the funding margins as well from the indicative pricing that we're receiving out there in the market. So our property valuations also went down by approximately 7%. And that's a like-on-like number. Remember, they pull a board, no property. Up.
Sorry,
by 7%.
Okay.
So,
yes.
And that's a like-for-like number. In other words, it's not driven by acquisitions. It's purely driven by in-property sort of increases that are driven by the fundamentals in the portfolio itself. So quite a bit of investment went into renewables during the period, mainly rooftop solar, and that led to a 240% increase in avoided emissions across our portfolio. That's a part of our business where we're allocating more capital. But also during the period, importantly, is we're back in a position where now that we can actually now start buying assets. And we announced transactions to the tune of 700 million rand in August this year. And we went to market for capital and we raised about 560 million to fund the equity portion of that. And basically sold some property and reinvested the money into the acquisitions partly, but most importantly, into all of our sustainability initiatives. So overall, healthy balance sheet, growing NAV, and I think the market is obviously starting to realize that because the share price is up quite a bit from where we were last year.
Mm.
I think yesterday, our share closed at about 670 or thereabouts. Last year, this time, the share was sitting at about 420. And this is all just driven by fundamental recognition that, there's serious embedded value in the share. And we believe that there's still some more to come, from that point of view, because we're still trading at a discount relative to NAV.
Well, that share price, I just checked it up on the MoneyWeb website now. It's 25%, almost 26% up for the year to date, so not a full year. So, yeah, the REIT sector is doing very well this year. Most REITs are up quite a bit. But I was particularly interested in what you said around your gearing around 34%, and you know, for a relatively small fund compared to some of the big names, you know, to get into the market and raise capital, $550 million, it's positive signs. You know, it's funding acquisitions. I see that you've increased your exposure. You play in the Gauteng market, but you've increased your exposure to Soweto. Thanks for that nice roundup of where the company stands from a financial perspective. Isaac, I have to ask, I looked at your shareholders and I see Cape Town-based REIT Fairvest has increased its stake in Dupula. Can you give us some insight in who are the major shareholders in the fund currently?
The stock is quite widely held by many other institutional shareholders. And it's the usual suspects, you know, mainly Cape Town-based asset managers, your large asset managers, some boutique asset managers, mentioned but a few, Abex, Camissa, Stanlip, Old Mutual, Sunlub. It's really every name you can think of and a few other sort of boutique-y things. And as you mentioned, Fairvest also has a slug of the share at the moment. And they obviously are seeing value in Dupula in having picked up that portion of our stock.
I don't know if you know an exact figure, but I just thought it was interesting because I heard some analysts talking about some developments in the market. So I wanted to ask, do you think, are you interacting with them? I don't know what their stake is, but is there potential for some sort of takeover?
I think it's a strategic holding for them. I mean, we're on friendly terms and we talk from time to time. And I think that's about where it is at the moment. It's and I don't know where it will go, but I mean, as things stand now, it's a mere shareholding in Dupula.
Okay, thanks for that. Obviously, they're also playing in that rural convenience and township space that's doing pretty well from a retail perspective. Your exit from residential, you got into that just before COVID or around COVID. Is it going to be a full exit out of the residential and focusing on the other sectors?
Yeah, and Soren, we think it's a very defensive, very good asset class, but it needs scale. And we just don't believe that at the moment, in terms of how we are configured, we should be allocating more capital or scaling up in that area. So that residential portfolio actually in this year under review did very well. We dropped vacancies to about 6% and post year end to about 3%. So it's fundamentally doing quite nicely for us, but it's small. I mean, it's small, and we're seeing quick and other opportunities in industrial and in retail. So instead of sitting out there and trying to build a team around it, rather just hand over the portfolio to someone that's already scaled, you know, to make the best of it.
Just to conclude, there's a lot of positivity in the market. The JSE reached a new record following the budget. Isaac, what's your thoughts on prospects ahead, both for the fund but the SA economy? And just one last thing there. From an SA economy perspective, I'm looking also particularly at the Gauteng economy because the fund is pretty much exposed to Gauteng as the economic hub.
You know, Gauteng still remains the largest economy in Africa, not just South Africa. You know, I mean, it's the heartbeat of the South African economy. I mean, obviously there are some challenges, mainly sort of self-inflicted challenges at the moment around service delivery and politics and things like that. But, you know, we've got the largest airport there. We've got the largest dry ports, you know, stone throw away from the largest port in African Durban, very large industrial base, a huge amount of people, you know, density-wise. And basically, you know, my thoughts is if Gauteng doesn't grow, the SA economy won't grow. And all indications are now that, you know, between the Reserve Bank and National Treasury, they're guiding for higher growth numbers going forward.
Mm.
So if those higher growth numbers come through going forward, you know, Gauteng will be a massive recipient of that. And I think to some extent, I think the migration down south is not at the same rapid pace as it used to be. And there isn't a huge amount of employment opportunities where people are going, coastally. And that sort of thing. So quite a lot of people still have one foot in Gauteng, one foot on the coast, and that sort of thing. And as I said, that migration pattern is also slowing down now and so on. So, I mean, we're bullish on Gauteng. We say we're just by sheer number, but also by sheer strategic importance of the province in SA. And retail is about numbers. And I think for as long as retail is about numbers, your province that holds the majority of residents in South Africa should actually, benefit from anything that happens positively economically. It feels like and looks like the market is actually welcoming the sort of lowering of that inflation target and targeting of lower interest rates. And if you structurally have lower interest rates in SA, those interest rates will benefit Gauteng. Mm. So what I'm saying is I'm bullish on South Africa. And if I'm bullish on South Africa, I'm even more bullish on Gauteng, basically.
Well, it's good to hear. Let's hope the G20 turned things around as well. It's not just a one-off event and it's not just cleaned up, particularly Johannesburg, just for the G20. But Isaac, it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time on the podcast. We'll have to leave it there. That was Isaac Peterson, the CEO of JSE-listed Dupula Properties.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Property Pod with Suren Naidu. To listen to more episodes, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates. Follow Suren on Twitter at Suren Naidu for more of his property industry content and other business stories.